Hello!
Happy New Year!
Happy New Year! It's 2023 and this is the Arts Hole program where we do something.
New Year.
Flying start. Take apart pieces of art, see if we can put them back together again. My name is Bea Roberts. I'm a scriptwriter and a script doctor. With me, I have Mr. Luke Haynes.
The one, the only, the legend, the inimitable. And because it's the New Year.
Disco the podcast puppy.
She never contributes.
she often does.
She makes noise.
Yeah.
It's basically what I do around here. Another piranha in the tank for me. Because it's the new year, we thought we'd start the way all new years start. We're going to have an end of year ceremony. So it's the holies. We're going to do the whole awards for the. Yeah. We were going to do a big fanfare and get a band, but we have no budget. I've got a slide whistle.
It's actually my favourite Christmas. Such a good Christmas present.
Yeah, there you go. It's the holies.
If you want to liven up your TV viewing, get yourself a slide whistle. Yeah,
pay for itself, honestly.
It really does. So we thought we would try and do a bit of a roundup of the year by creating the holies, our new awards so that we may never do again, depending on how this goes.
Yeah.
And we haven't even picked winners because Luke thought it would be more fun for us to argue this out on air.
Yeah, I stand by my decision. And first of all, let's have a look at what we've got. I want to do a little in memoriam section, as is traditional, for the start of an award show where we look at some of the people that
we've lost. This year.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
I was going to get Meryl Streep and Robert De Niro to present this bit, but they're not available.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
they haven't got back to me. Oh. So we're just going to have to do it without them.
That's fine.
Right, who have we lost? Fred Ward died this year, who was a character actor. Nobody else except me knows who that is, but I was sad about it, and I still intend to at some point try and cram in.
Do you want to elaborate who Fred Ward is? For those people who don't know, that's definitely not me.
He was the former lumberjack and character actor who was the second billing in Tremors with Kevin Bacon. He was the bad guy in Naked Gun 3. He sort of had a middling career. He played Colin Farrell's dad in that second series,
he's
True Detective.
Not the guy from Pet Sematary.
No.
Oh.
No, that's Fred Gwynne. He's been dead for a while. That's a different dead Fred you're thinking of.
Oh, well, I'm sadder about that.
Well, I'm sorry, but that didn't happen this year, so it didn't make the cut. But I always liked Fred Ward, and I might still try and get to do a movie he did at some point, which was like a magic-based Who Framed Roger Rabbit, apparently. It's going to be too obscure to really... Might do it as a Patreon. I was sad about that. Robbie Coltrane died again.
Yeah, love Robbie Coltrane. If you've never seen, because you're a young person or just whatever, you've never seen the TV series Cracker, I highly, highly recommend that you seek it out. I think it is still one of the best TV series that was ever made. Robbie Coltrane, it's from the 90s. He plays a psychologist who is brought in. It's less of a whodunit and a kind of whydunit.
Yeah.
Where he, lots of intense interview scenes where he's a criminal profiler and he gets confessions out of people. And it's beautifully acted, beautifully written by one of my TV heroes, Jimmy McGovern, who I got to meet this year.
Clang!
But
the gong fell down at the awards there. That must have been what that was.
But Robbie Coltrane is absolutely superb in that, as he is in many, many other things. But yeah, so I was sad about Robbie Coltrane.
Yeah, I was. Ray Liotta died quite suddenly, as did Paul Sorvino. So half the cast of Goodfellas are now no longer with us, which is a bit of a loss.
Ray Liotta made his last performance in a TV series called Blackbird.
Yeah, we'll come to that in a little bit. That's going to be on the ballot. And then there's some of the weirder stuff. We've lost... Angela Lansbury died, and I think it is time that I buried the hatchet, perhaps too late.
it's too late to say you're sorry now.
It may well be, because I've always staunchly maintained that I hate Angela Lansbury, and what I realised very late on is that if you spent a lot of time working nights and having to watch daytime TV, they used to play Murder, She Wrote quite a lot on TV in the middle of the day about 10 years ago, and I don't like Murder, She Wrote, and I think my irritation that was constantly coming on when I was trying to watch TV has bled into an irrational hatred of Angela Lansbury, who really didn't do anything wrong. So
Angela Lansbury's actually something of a fucking legend.
I know, so
I've continued to be wrong about
this. So I'm putting my hand, I'm saying, actually, I'm sorry, Angela Lansbury, wherever you are now. I don't actually hold any animosity towards her.
Did you never watch Bedknobs and Broomsticks?
No, I did, that's
child?
Quite good.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Now, if you are a fan of the film Bedknobs and Broomsticks, do not go back and read the book Bedknobs and Broomsticks, as I did when I was searching for material to adapt. It's spicy, and by spicy, I mean racist.
You meant racist, yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of people who are spicy, by which I mean fucking mental, Kirstie Alley died, which is kind of a footnote at this point. Her career never really went anywhere.
I absolutely counter that. May I bring to your attention Cheers.
Yeah, Cheers, which finished in 1993.
And Drop Dead Gorgeous.
Yeah, 1997.
She's wonderful in Drop Dead Gorgeous.
She is. I've got nothing against...
I'm saying her latter years.
Yeah, the last 25 years. She hasn't really done a lot, is my point. Yeah. And what I was going to bring up is that she apparently had some form of cancer, and she was a devout Scientologist. And I just feel like once you've paid $50,000 to Scientology, you're sitting there thinking, I should be able to fly and shoot lasers by now. Why is that not working? But then you should definitely be immune to cancer. It's in the fucking leaflet, right? I wonder at what point, as a Scientologist, do you go, oh, this might have been bullshit.
Oh, I think the problem of being in a cult is that it's very difficult to... Yeah. To see that, and you tend to just double down harder.
Yeah, and with more money in Scientology.
Because I'm sure that the Scientology community would say she wasn't Scientologying hard enough.
But she was like an OT6 or something.
Well, yeah, but the problem's always you. Like,
yeah.
And by that, I just mean specifically you, not in general.
Oh, yeah, no, that is true. Will Smith's career, which began in 1986, died at the Oscars, and was survived by that slavery movie on Apple that nobody's watched. Ivana Trump. Well, hit the cough button. Ivana Trump, not technically in show business, but still a tangential figure, first wife of the former president. Worth noting, just because she was then buried on his golf course around the time that it turns out that he'd stolen a load of nuclear secrets. And there's a theory that he buried a load of, like, nuclear documents in his ex-wife's coffin on his golf course somewhere.
I 100% believe that.
Yeah, I certainly, yeah. That doesn't sound that crazy to me because of who we're dealing with. Anne Hesh died.
Oh.
Yeah, which passed me by. I didn't notice. She was in a car crash. Formerly Ellen DeGeneres' partner. She was in Volcano with Tommy Lee Jones and a couple... You know, again...
She's a 2000s actress.
Yeah, yeah. Not a huge career, but, you know, she was a name. Yeah. But I had that thing, I don't know if you've ever had this, where, like, something sad happens, and as you read on, a detail completely derails your train of thought. So Anne Hesh dies. Oh, car crash. Oh, she, yeah, no great age. And then the news story said that she is survived by her son, Homer Laffoon. Which,
wow.
by her ex-husband, Coleman Coley Laffoon. And I was like, you can't bring Homer Laffoon into a sentence and you'd still be sad. Fuck off. That's not a human's name. I instantly stopped being sad. I was like, Homer Laffoon, you say? Yeah. Oh, I've got Coley Laffoon's face. Survived by her son, Homer Laffoon, everybody.
There we go.
And then I had a joke here, regrettably, about the Avatar franchise. I thought that'd be dead by now by the time we recorded this. Apparently, Avatar 2 doing quite well.
There we go. We're going to be talking a little bit about Avatar 2.
Yes, it will come up again, don't worry. Yes.
So now are we on to the awards section of the evening?
We are on to the awards section of the evening. Again, I couldn't get a celebrity presenter.
Hang on, I have to get my dress on.
Okay.
Yeah, you've got your tux looking.
Who are you wearing this year?
Who am I wearing? It says TK Maxx.
Oh, there you go. Oh, it's a genuine Max. Again, we couldn't get a celebrity presenter. Kevin Spacey was available. I actually had to keep telling him that I didn't care if he was available. He was very insistent about how available he was with me until I had to shut the door. But yeah, again, we'll just do this ourselves. Should I get a slide whistle fanfare?
Is that really... It is the gift that keeps giving.
Aren't I just?
Okay.
Are we going to do these in order or do you want to
So this is completely like, well, I like all award ceremonies. We're just being honest about
it. Just subjective.
Completely subjective and partial.
We haven't seen everything that came out this year because nobody has. Yeah. What do you want?
This is always the big problem with theatre awards, really, is that you might have a huge theatre award, say, such as the Olivier Awards. But the Olivier Awards are what critics have seen in a 5-mile radius of central London. So it's by no means exclusive. So yeah, there is a enormous amount of TV and movies. Obviously, we have only seen what we have seen.
Yeah.
So this is incredibly partial and subjective on just what we reckon.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, we don't even agree on all of them, and your mileage may vary.
Exactly. So our nominations for...
What are we going to do first?
Let's do Best Film.
Best Film this year. Okay, and the nominations are Glass Onion, which is subheaded as a Knives Out mystery. It's a slightly awkward title, but yeah. Glass Onion on Netflix. The Lost City with Sandra Bullock and Channing Tatum. Bullet Train with Brad Pitt. and The Banshees of Inisherin, which is an Irish movie with Colin Farrell and Brendan Gleeson.
Yes, very, very good.
Yeah.
And we haven't decided who the winner is. If you have to pick a winner, we'll say it after three. Ready?
One, two, three.
Glass Onion.
Yeah, it's so good. And it's not just that it's fresh in our minds that we watched it the other day. It was only actually released on Netflix on like the 23rd of December. So yeah, it was a very, very late entrance. But it's so good. It's just...
It is absolutely exquisite. So it is taking a very tried and true format. It is a murder mystery akin to an Agatha Christie.
Yeah.
We've got a set number of people on an island,
yeah,
and we are trying to unravel the crime that happened.
And it manages to make that format feel fresh, which is no mean feat given how well trodden that ground is. And also, like, Knives Out was fun. I liked Knives Out,
yeah,
but this is just a cut above.
It is absolutely astonishing. It manages to be wildly entertaining with a 2.5 hour runtime, yeah, I think, that you don't you don't even blink at all at that. The cast are absolutely superb.
Yeah.
Headed up, of course, by Daniel Craig.
Yeah, as Benoit Blanc, who is a sort of foghorn leghorn detective. Yeah. And I was initially a little bit disappointed because in Knives Out, he's got this sort of ridiculous southern accent that he's putting on. And then there was initially the idea that in the sequel, he was going to have a completely different ridiculous accent and we just weren't ever going to address what happened, which I really like as an idea. But actually, having seen Glass Onion, I like that he's still a southern fried detective. I like that he's still that character.
It's beautiful. And I think that the absolute cherry on the top of how wonderful the Glass Onion is, which feels a bit weird to say cherry on top of an onion, is the satire that is woven in, is set in the ridiculous private island of a tech billionaire.
Yeah. Also, the timing really helped this film a lot without getting too far into the news.
And the way it satirises its characters, a fantastic return from Kate Hudson being superb. Yeah. It's just wonderful. So, yeah, I'm not surprised. But just to briefly talk about the other movies we have. So, The Banshees of Inisherin is by Martin McDonagh. Anybody who's a theatre person will know Martin McDonagh is a very famous playwright who's moved into making movies, often with Brendan Gleeson, actually, who they're a wonderful partnership. The Banshees of Inisherin takes a beautifully simple premise, which is that Brendan Gleeson's character decides they live on this tiny little island. He doesn't want to be friends with Colin Farrell anymore.
Yeah.
That's it. They're two men of a certain age, and he just doesn't want to be his friend. And that the whole movie just is about that premise. It doesn't go outside of that, but it has a, you know, resonance with the civil war that is happening in the mainland. It is just beautifully wrought character study, and it's beautifully shot. It's really fascinating.
Yeah, it manages to do that thing, and also Father Ted used to do really well, of having like a very well fleshed out cast of weirdos that all inhabit this tiny landmass, and you sort of get to know them all with very few strokes. They're all very well drawn, like you say. You sort of understand who everybody is immediately.
Do you want to talk a little bit about Bullet Train?
Yeah, Bullet Train is actually adapted from a Japanese novel. There has been a little bit of probably justified allegations of whitewashing in it, in that it's not a Japanese protagonist anymore. It's Brad Pitt. But basically, Brad Pitt is a hitman who has to board a Japanese bullet train and retrieve a briefcase, which is a simple job. He's been away getting his life together and now considers himself to be zen and to have a new take on life. And it's going to be sort of a new year, new him, positive outlook on life. But also on the train are a cast of weirdos and misfits who are all after the same briefcase for various ends. It's very unapologetically weird. Mm-hmm. Brad Pitt's a lot of fun in it. It's got a little bit of that sort of locked room thing. Like they're all stuck on a train together. Yeah. And it's all about sort of which pieces are moving where within the train. It's
got a slight kind of Tarantino vibe in the way that it's like shot and
back
edited.
Back when Tarantino was good.
Yeah, there's lots of like sort of fast cuts and sort of unusual framing and interesting characters. The colour palette's really saturated.
Yeah.
So it looks wonderful.
It sort of has that Japanese thing, like, you know, that Tokyo neon quality where everything's like turned up to 11 in your eyeballs. You know?
But it manages to sustain a really good thrill kind of engine. I mean it's literally like the kind of metaphor of the speeding train is really good. It manages to sustain that tension and that suspense all the way through it, but also has these beautiful character moments as well.
And Brad Pitt is doing very well as a hitman who's trying not to kill anybody. He has to keep accidentally killing people in self-defense for reasons he doesn't understand yet, which is that's fun.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
The Lost City was a real surprise, and it might have passed you by as it did us for quite a long time, but partly because it's got such a terrible title,
very generic title.
It doesn't really tell you about what the movie is either, although the reason that it's called The Lost City, I believe, is that's the it's about a novelist. Sandra Bullock is playing a romance novelist who writes these kind of bodice ripping kind of
swashbuckling thrillers.
Swashbuckling thrillers with two sort of Indiana Jones is what I'm searching for. Kind of heroes, male and female Indiana Jones, who have this great love affair. She's written this huge series of novels. She's absolutely sick of doing it, and she is completely emotionally closed down after the loss of her husband. Through a ridiculous series of events, she ends up going on one of these encounters exactly like she's written with the cover model from her book, played by Channing Tatum, who's a kind of himbo, who's very adorable and has a lot more to give. And it's a wonderful rom-com. It's really funny. It's beautifully wrought. The performances are great. The chemistry between Sandra Bullock and Channing Tatum's really workable. They're both incredibly charming.
Brad Pitt crops up again in a sort of extended cameo. Actually, the voice of Brad Pitt's handler in Bullet Train is Sandra Bullock because they worked together on Lost City.
Yes. So that's, and Daniel Radcliffe.
And Daniel Radcliffe's in it having a fucking whale of a time, because I think what I like about Daniel Radcliffe, or one of many things I like about Daniel Radcliffe, is that he's part of what I would say is the new and more fortunate generation of child actors where he doesn't seem to have gone mad.
Yeah.
Well, I think he's been handled a little bit better. I think Hollywood is a bit better at like not driving their children to insanity and drug abuse. So I think Daniel Radcliffe sort of made his money, realised he never had to work again, and is just doing things that he thinks are fun now.
Yeah.
Which is, I fully salute him for.
And he's a great actor. And
he's really good in a lot of things, especially in this.
So yeah, it's a really enjoyable, beautifully constructed, quite traditional actually rom-com, but with this adventure kind of edge to it.
Yeah, it's a sort of funnier and more wacky and more likeable, I think, version of Romancing the Stone, if anyone remembers that film. But it's really good.
Great.
Okay, moving on to Best TV.
A very difficult category.
Yeah, we're in a golden age of TV, as everyone keeps telling you.
Aren't we just?
Yeah.
So our candidates for Best Original... So this is Best Original TV Series, the first series of things. So the nominations are Severance, Peacemaker, Blackbird, and She-Hulk, Attorney at Law.
I'm running out of crowd noises to make.
Okay, we haven't picked a winner, but we'll do it after three. Ready?
Okay. Well, do we want to talk about them first and then pick a winner? Is that more more exciting?
No, let's pick a winner first.
Okay.
Okay, ready? After three. Yeah. One, two, three. Peacemaker.
Yes, we still agree. Okay, great.
So do you want to tell us a little bit about about it.
Yeah, Peacemaker was a spin-off from the Suicide Squad, the movie. That's not the movie Suicide Squad, which was made and kind of flopped. There was a reboot movie made by James Gunn called The Suicide Squad. Definite article.
James Gunn, people know from Guardians of the Galaxy,
yeah. And a few other things. So The Suicide Squad, we weren't that bothered by it.
Didn't love it.
But within that, John Cena, the former, or I believe still current WWE wrestler, played a character called Peacemaker, who was, spoiler alert, was shot in The Suicide Squad in such a way that they left it open that he might not be dead. Yeah. And so now we've done a spin-off series of his character, Peacemaker, who it turns out is not dead. And he's sort of every... If you listen to our Duke Nukem episode, if you're a patron, he's exactly what I wanted to do with that. He's a sort of caricature of 90s machismo and sort of like an extinction-level gym bro douchebag and superhero who also happens to be American foreign policy made flesh. He keeps saying that he wants peace, he doesn't care who has to kill to get it. Which is, so he is recruited by a government agency to work for them and to use his gym bro douchebag powers for them. And there's the opening sequence is fucking superb. It's a sort of hair metal ballad dance number with the entire cast. And he manages to be like, John Cena's fucking amazing in this. He manages to be like such a fucking tool and also like really wounded and lovable. And you would start to understand who he is and why he is this way. And there is a soul under there.
Well, I think what elevates this, because I am not into, the
superheroes
stuff, and things like that generally. What makes this just something that is really superb and will appeal to you, even if you're not remotely interested in kind of superheroes or Marvel Universe or DC or anything like that, is the emotional storyline. So what is wonderful again about Guardians of the Galaxy is not just the kind of irreverent humour, but the emotional framework that I think James Gunn has got some daddy issues, but they are working for him. So Peacemaker has he's from a very sort of that American white supremacist sort of background, which he's never really questioned or thought about. He's bought it. His dad, we find out, is a kind of Ku Klux Klan
grand wizard
superhero called the White Dragon, which he doesn't seem to know the full extent of, and which gets unpacked a lot more in the series. And as he is brought into this government team to work with, he makes friends with a black woman who is absolutely wonderful. We need to look up who she is. And he is challenged all the time about his misogyny and about his racism. He doesn't consider himself racist, but
none of them do.
And his these attitudes that are inherited, that are unquestioned in him, he begins unpacking and questioning, and that is intrinsically tied to his relationship with his father. And it transforms into something that is really redemptive and really beautiful and moving.
Yeah, Danielle Brooks is Danielle
Brooks. Oh yeah, who people will know played Tasty in Orange Is the New Black. She's absolutely wonderful. And so it's a really fascinating series. I think, living in the age of cancel culture and all of that stuff, it's interesting to start unpacking how do we move on and how do we recover and how do we repair relationships and build fences and all of that stuff. And this is a series that actually does it in a really sophisticated way without ever feeling like you're being taught told.
Because it also has a lot of like schlocky alien invasion type
and
stuff
really
going.
Funny.
Yeah, and it's funny. But like you say, not to name check him in every category, but like Quentin Tarantino always defends his questionable racial politics by saying, he said that America needs to have a conversation with itself about race, to which I thought, okay, why do you get to chair it, white man Quentin Tarantino? But this series does that beautifully, where like I say, it's unpacking all this sort of inherent misogyny and racism in America, and it's like it's asking America questions about itself.
Yeah.
Both very loudly and very quietly at the same time, which is a neat trick to pull off.
I think what is brilliant about the way that the other characters tackle Peacemaker is that they call him a fucking douchebag and a racist, but they also still allow him a chance to grow and to evolve and to learn. So he is both sort of held to account, but also redeemed.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
It's really good, yeah. Robert Patrick plays his father from Terminator 2.
Yeah, it's great. Now, if I was going to a second tier award, I would go for Severance, which people might have heard a lot about. You might have even seen it, so I won't bang on about it too much. It's on Apple TV. It is a really high concept kind of sci-fi drama, which is beautifully sort of wrought and weird. I think probably the most similar thing is something like Being John Malkovich, that whole area of films. What's that guy called?
I can't remember what his name is. Not Judd Apatow.
If you look it up while I talk about it. The idea is, what if you could sever your work self from your real self, so that basically a severed person, you have a brain implant, and when you go into work, you reach a certain point where you forget everything. So your work self only knows work, and they never seem to leave. They never have a home life. They don't know anything that exists outside the office. But you, when you come out of the office, you get to live a whole separate life.
Charlie Kaufman,
yeah. That's who I was thinking of. And it looks stunning. I'm not sure I've seen any TV that looks as beautiful as this. And it is an absolutely fascinating premise. It's a little bit frustrating that they obviously set up, there's a huge amount of mystery about how the severance process works, who the bad guys are. There's goats roaming around. There's all these sort of questions set up that we don't know.
It's doing that thing that Lost did, but the difference is that I think it actually had a fucking idea where it's going, which is,
So you don't get a resolution. We are getting a second series, but it is really, really worth watching.
And I'll have to confer with you on this, She-Hulk Attorney at Law, let's cover that next.
So She-Hulk Attorney at Law, again, I wasn't mad for it, although I was like, well, you know, She-Hulk and kind of 80s spin of the whole thing. It's been written by Jessica Gao, who worked on Silicon Valley and Rick and Morty, so if you like those things, it's got that kind of sensibility. And it's headed up by Tatiana Maslany, who people might know as Orphan Black. She's a fantastic actor. In Orphan Black, it was a series about clones where Tatiana Maslany played about 8 or 9 different characters that were all clones of herself, brilliantly and superbly. She's a wonderful actor. So She-Hulk is the Hulk's cousin. They get into a car accident. She ends up with some of his blood and she gets his Hulk powers. But what's really brilliant, and this happens in the first episode, is that unlike the Hulk, who spent years trying to control when he transforms, when his rage gets so big that he transforms into the Hulk, she's like, I can do it. Women constantly suppress their anger. I can turn into the Hulk whenever I fucking
just,
like.
Just being a woman, I've got this.
She's like, I know all about fear and rage. And so she is beautifully is able to completely control when she Hulks out and when she doesn't with like pinpoint precision, which is wonderfully observed. It's really fun. It's really funny. It's really watchable. It's still got a lot of that like schlocky kind of.
The only sort thing. Acid test with it goes very meta, which I thought was very good.
But
ultimately it goes so meta it basically breaks the entire Marvel universe, which I think needed to happen, to be honest.
I think it's superb and I enjoyed it, and I don't want to talk about it too much.
No spoilers, so I can't really but it's, I think, do we want to sub that one for that one?
No, so Luke is trying to make a last minute submission for Yellow Jacket.
It turns out it was Moonlight that won it. Hello, I'm Warren Beatty.
Well, I think that's from 2021.
Okay, so we missed that.
So, the other series that we're just going to briefly talk about is Blackbird. It is a series that is available on Apple TV. It is a crime drama. It's based on a true story about a drug dealer who gets put into prison, and he is given a chance of release if he can elicit a confession from a killer who is in a maximum security psychiatric ward, who they believe he's been convicted for two murders, but they believe he's a serial killer and there's many, many, many more bodies. And so it's a very high stakes, simple premise thriller. I think, and again, so it's a beautiful character study. I think the acting is superb.
Yeah, Taron Egerton is good in it, doing the sort of straight man work, but you're like Paul Walter Hauser as the serial killer, who seems to maybe be mentally deficient and maybe not. And he's doing the real showboaty stuff and he is fantastic at it.
If you don't recognise that name, and I didn't, Paul Walter Hauser, you will know him. He's a character actor that turns up in a lot of things. Most notably, he's one of the hapless hitmen in I, Tonya.
Yes. He's usually sort of your comedy fat guy in something, but like a lot of people that are tarred with that brush, he's actually got a lot more to give. Yeah. And he's like stunning in this.
It's a really beautiful, well-constructed, satisfying miniseries. Yeah. And it was Ray Liotta. It gives a superb performance as Taron Egerton's retired police officer father. And his last performance.
Yeah, and quite poignant, because the whole thrust of it is that his father is in increasingly poor health.
And that he's dying.
Yeah, he won't live to see his father, or his father won't live to see him released from prison unless he does this thing, which is one of the driving factors. But Hauser manages to be sort of pitiful and terrifying by turns, and sometimes you think he probably didn't do this and he doesn't know what he's saying, and sometimes you realise that he may very well be a monster that is hiding under the sheen of tragedy.
It really keeps you on the hook, twisting all the time, like the best psychological thrillers about, like, if he's innocent, this is terrible, but if he's not innocent and like he's killed who knows how many women he's killed, it's beautifully done. It's really great.
Next one, biggest letdown. Do you want to do Still Great, and then we'll get into so we'll do the Still Great Awards.
The Still Great Awards. We realised that lots of our best series were returning series. So this is our favourite returning series. Yeah. And the nominations are...
Barry.
Yep.
Girls Five Ever. Yep. Only Murders in the Building. Yep. And Succession.
Okay. So, I don't know what to choose, actually. Okay.
Just like the real Oscars, we're making this up on the night, folks.
I am...
Hang on, I'm going to go and slap Chris Rock. We're not talking about it.
I am going to... All right, I've made my choice. Have you made your choice?
I've got a choice, yeah.
Okay, we're going to say it after three. You ready? One, two, three.
Barry. Barry. Yes. Hey. We genuinely didn't plan this, by the way. I think we just agree.
We just spent a lot of time together.
Yeah. So for those who don't know, what is it, third series now?
We're in series three.
It's got one more to come, which is going to wrap the whole thing up. But Barry deals with an assassin who decides he wants to be an improv actor, comedian, under the tutelage of Henry Winkler's character. Henry Winkler, always a delight. And it somehow manages to thread that really difficult needle where it is pitch black and violent and harrowing and also really funny and silly and cartoony at the same time. And, like, one does not detract from the other somehow, which is so difficult to do.
Yeah, It's absolutely stunning. If you are remotely kind of geek about writing, about series construction, it is so beautifully constructed. Each episode, it often has kind of a thriller engine because he's involved in hits. He gets involved with the mafia in lots of different, all sorts of different gang warfare he ends up getting involved in.
Yeah.
And so there's lots of really high stakes kind of action-y sequences where he's being pursued.
But then they often have like a completely unintended slapstick resolution that he is, which is brilliantly done. Like he seems to have this sort of supernatural ability to just be very lucky when it comes to murder. Like people keep getting themselves killed around him and see like in a sort of ongoing Deus Ex Machina gag. Yeah. That is just like,
so it ends up being a kind of the plot wise somewhere in between like a farce and a thriller.
Yeah,
which are the hardest things to construct.
Yeah.
So you never are quite sure, even when you're watching Barry go into, you know, someone's in the shower and he goes in with a gun.
Yeah.
You have no idea what is going to happen next. Yeah. It just keeps twisting and turning all the time. And I think what elevated this series for me is a performance by Anthony Carrigan, who plays, who's the head of...
he's the Armenian mafia, isn't he?
Yeah.
The Armenian or the Albanian or something, yeah.
I think it's an Eastern European mafia boss who falls in love with one of the other gang leaders who ends up being killed. And it's a lot about his emotional journey and his sort of desire for revenge and things. And it's just beautiful. There's nothing else like it.
And Bill Hader in the central performance is fucking unbelievable. He's so good. Because Barry as a character is slowly unraveling from like combined weight of PTSD and just constantly people trying to kill him. He is not okay. And he again manages to do that thing, funny enough, that that Blackbird does, where he can, within a comedy show, he is funny and sympathetic and also genuinely frightening at times when you realise that this man is starting to go completely insane and you understand why, but that doesn't make him any less threatening when he is...
Yeah, Henry Winkler is also superb. It's this beautiful, tragicomic clown. He's genuinely very sad and very funny.
He has notes of his character in Arrested Development, Barry Zuckerkorn, and that he is this sort of shyster acting coach who is like just trying to bilk his students left and right, but also there is something kind of pathetic and sympathetic about him as well.
It's really wonderful. Just quickly,
elsewhere in the still great category,
The Girls Five Ever is a wonderful premise. It is a comedy series about a 90s girl band who decide to get back together and they're all in their 40s and have a second chance at fame. It is incredibly funny. So it's written by Meredith Scardino, who wrote The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. So if you like that, it's
which we did,
which we love. Very bright, very bubblegum, very funny, but really feminist.
It's like, again, being quietly cutting. There's a lot of like gags about like terrible things they were made to do in their pants in the 90s, like without going too dark on that, but just a little side swipe to like, look how fucking awful girl power and all this really was for,
and how terribly exploited they were and everything. It's really, really warm and it's really funny and it's just beautiful.
Only Murders in the Building is Steve Martin and Martin Short and Selena Gomez. In its second, it's got a second series, it's now going to get a third one as well. Steve Martin, always a great comedy writer. It's but again, like with Glass Onion, it manages to be funny but also be a genuinely good, compelling murder mystery within each series, which takes some doing.
And it's got this tone that is quite unlike anything else, because it is this it's not New York, it's a slightly comic book sort of, or picture book rather, kind of version.
Woody Allen-esque quality of like that sort of elegy to New York.
So it looks beautiful. Again, it's funny. It's great. It continues to be good. And Succession, just the titan of TV. Catch up on Succession if you haven't watched it. Loosely based on the Murdoch, or inspired by...
No, it's not, for legal reasons.
For legal reasons, it's not remotely at all like the Murdoch dynasty. About this tyrant head of a huge media conglomeration and the children warring over who is going to be taking his seat after his death. It just continues to be one of the best things written on TV.
Yeah, absolute juggernaut in every sense.
Yeah. But
yeah, you don't
So we created a new category. Well, this is all new, but we felt like... I was going to move on to stop talking about, but I realised we haven't done
Biggest Letdown yet. Now we're getting to the fun stuff. You don't want to hear us praise things. You want to hear what sucked. Everyone knows that. Like, I might read a 5-star review, but I'll always read a 1-star review.
A perfect category for the slide whistle. Now,
oh, I'll get it out. Hang on.
Now, the reason...
Biggest Letdown.
Now, there's a lot of stuff that sucked.
Yeah.
But there's nothing that sucks quite so much as something you're really looking forward to that then sucks.
Yeah, absolutely. So the nominees are... House of Gucci. Yeah. House of Gucci. I'm a Lady Gaga.
Am I Being Unreasonable with Daisy May Cooper?
Yeah. Prey, the Predator prequel, which is not good if you've got problems with your peas.
And Don't Worry, Darling.
Yes. Now, Prey and Don't Worry, Darling, are we going to pick one out of this?
Yeah, we have to pick one after three. Ready? Okay. You got one?
Yeah.
One, two, three. Prey. House of Gucci.
Yeah. These were our respective episodes about this time last year, weren't they? We were both very annoyed about one film.
So we're not going to go into any of these.
We've got a separate episode on each one.
We also covered Don't Worry, Darling. Yeah. I guess the only thing we didn't cover was Am I Being Unreasonable? So Daisy May Cooper, absolute West Country legend, who co-helmed...
This country,
with her brother Charlie Cooper. So she was set up to do a brand new series, which was going to be a kind of black comedy thriller, that was kind of set up that it was going to be all about this dead cat, and it looked like it was going to be have this thriller engine but be that kind of irreverent comedy. There was stuff about it I liked, but ultimately I found it really difficult to engage with, and I think largely because a lot of it centres around her having an affair with one of her best friend's partners. Yeah. And it just, that was quite a difficult thing to buy into as her being sympathetic. It had a weird tone. I really was looking forward to it. I wanted to like it.
I didn't like her in it. I found the whole thing quite unpleasant. Like, it was, again, it missed the balancing act that some of these other projects have done, where like, it wasn't sort of dark and funny and farcical. It was just
kind of outrageous enough. No. It didn't have that wicked naughtiness that black comedy should have. And it didn't have enough of a thriller engine to feel like a twisty turny, what's happening next. No. Managed to fall. It just, it clearly worked for a lot of people. It got a second series, but I wanted to love it and I didn't.
Yeah. Let's do most wasted. Oh, hang on. that was for Am I Being Unreasonable? I don't know what I'm doing. Let's do most wasted effort. I just wanted to touch on a couple of these. Uncharted, the movie. I can't remember if this came out tail end of 2020. Real barnstorming video game franchise. Uncharted 2 on the PlayStation, still one of the greatest games of all time. Which centres on, again, an Indiana Jones type character who I get is a generic white man in his 30s, as all characters have to be for fucking everything. Like, I'm tired of it and I am a generic white man in his 30s. But somehow they then cast it with Tom Holland as like a teenage version of the established character, and then put Mark Wahlberg in it for no reason, playing the character that in the games is 60 years old, but now it's Mark Wahlberg when he's 50, and we're doing a prequel for no real reason. Nobody watched it. It fucking tanked. It was such an easy property to adapt. It's such a slam dunk bubblegum franchise. We just go, oh, like Indiana Jones, like exploring ruins and temples and like having a likable... Yeah, it should have been so easy, and it just... What were they doing? What the fuck was that?
Yeah.
No idea. So that was annoying. Other wasted efforts. Morbius, the Marvel movie in which Jared Leto...
Please stop hiring Jared Leto. Yes.
Jared Leto, the probable sex offender, I think you can say that.
A huge... hugely credible slew of allegations of him being enormously creepy, if not actually downright sexually assaulting a large number of women, largely very young women to teenage girls.
Yes.
In addition to basically leading a cult.
Yeah. And that band that's not hot anymore. So sex offender and guy from that band that nobody gives a shit about anymore played a G-list Marvel character
who's... Stop hiring him.
Who's a vampire, but he's a good vampire, but he's a sexy vampire.
I don't want to watch him doing anything.
Nobody gives a fuck and nobody likes you, Jared Leto.
Well, apart from everyone in his cult.
Well, yeah. But yeah, again, just again, why? Why that?
Yeah.
Why that as a thing? Again, it tanked, fortunately. Avatar 2.
We're going to get onto it.
Okay. And House of the Dragon, which I watched all of House of the Dragon.
We did do an episode on the first...
Episode, and then you jacked out and I kept watching it. It became one of my favourite things to watch all year, but not for the right reasons. I began to love it because it was so bad and so baffling. I couldn't tell what was going on from one scene to the next. It was like trying to watch Middlemarch with a fucking head injury. Everyone's in a period costume, but I don't know who you are or what's going on anymore. It's incredible.
I think there's a lot less incest in Middlemarch.
Yeah, also a series that should really have been named Shut Your Fucking Face, Uncle Fucker, right? That's really what this was about. It was weirdly pro-incest. They kept jumping multiple years forward in the timelines and recasting everybody. It was just baffling, just a baffling spaffing of money across our screens over multiple years with CGI dragons and fires and castles, and I don't know who anyone is. And I've really enjoyed it.
I'm sure it's going to get a second series.
Oh, it has, yeah. But I enjoyed it in the same way as I would enjoy like a mescaline trip, right? I can't recommend it as being good, but Jesus, it was interesting.
Now, a category that seems very appertaining to the times we live in, yeah. We've called this the Stop Talking Awards.
The BoJack Horseman Diane Wynn Stop Talking Award. Yeah. If you've seen BoJack Horseman, there's an early series where the titular character is ringing into the news to correct about why he's not a terrible person, and his biographer just writes "Stop Talking" in big letters on a pad and is waving it at him while he's ranting down the phone. And this exact thing, this award, the nominees.
The nominees for the Stop Talking Award are Gwyneth Paltrow, yeah. James Cameron, Elon Musk, and Andrew Tate.
Yes.
And I've got my pick out of three. We'll talk about each one, why we want them to stop talking. Cases.
Yeah. I think there can only be one winner on this. But okay. I think we should do it at the end. Okay, we'll do it now.
We'll do it now. Okay, three. And then we'll talk about it. Yeah. One, two, three. James Cameron.
Really? Elon Musk.
Right, so I will talk briefly about... So Gwyneth Paltrow, the reason that she's been nominated, she probably would be a perennial favourite if we did this.
I mean, we all just wish she would stop talking.
Would stop talking. Now, my first thought about her of the stop talking was her interview she did with Hailey Bieber about nepotism babies, uh-huh. where she said that being a nepotism baby, and she did say you get an unfair advantage. She acknowledged
her parents were big time producers. That's how she got a career, in case you're not up to speed on that.
Yeah, and she's from royalty, acting and producing dynasty.
Steven
Spielberg is her godfather, yeah. who gave her her first role as Wendy in the Peter Pan movie Hook, when she was about 17, yeah. and she then went on to have quite a stratospheric career. I'm not saying she's not talented, but she's from a very, very clear line of nepotism. She said, whilst acknowledging her privilege very briefly, she then went on to complain and console Hailey Bieber, another child of privilege, to say it makes you work twice as hard and be twice as good. But the reason that I'm really putting Gwyneth Paltrow on this list is because of her continued goop. And at the Goop Wellness Summit, she platformed many, many anti-vax speakers just asking questions. Shouldn't we be able to discuss it? I acknowledge it's controversial, but let's give them a platform.
Oh, Roganing, yes. Yeah. I don't see why we shouldn't listen to the Obergruppenführer that I've had on my show.
So Goop have promoted... Now, the thing about wellness is, you know, if you want to get a crystal and put it somewhere to make yourself feel better, well, no, let me clarify. If you want to put it on your mantelpiece to make you feel better, fine. If you want to put it in your vagina, that's been very, very debunked as something that can be actively incredibly harmful by a number of gynecologists that you shouldn't do that.
Also, I'd like to point out, Gwyneth Paltrow didn't learn until very recently what her vagina was.
Yeah.
She didn't know the name for the various parts of her own anatomy, but was still giving out advice that you should put jade eggs up.
So Goop, it's not just this kind of, oh, you know, if you want to spend £300 on whatever, that's fine, because it actively promotes a lot of very harmful things for people. And the anti-vax one is really that you're having a global effect then when you're promoting anti-vax speakers. Now, if you want to hear more about an unpacking of Goop, there is a wonderful podcast called Maintenance Phase. I did an entire episode. I recommend that entire podcast. It's absolutely wonderful. But they completely unpack the Goop Wellness Summit and a lot of the dangerous things Gwyneth Paltrow said.
So yes, nepotism babies have to work so much harder than everybody else. Literally the opposite of what that means.
Yeah.
And also anti-vax. Yeah, fair. Yeah. What did James Cameron have to say for himself recently?
Now, James, the reason that I have picked James Cameron is because he steered so close on the line of saying something good. And then he so I think he's the perfect candidate for the Stop Talking Award.
you can get out with this if you stop talking now, but if you keep going. Yeah.
So Avatar 2 is a movie that, like the original Avatar, in which he is looking at colonialism. And he said the movie, this is a quote, the movie very pointedly referred to the colonial period in the Americas. So he's talking about the Na'vi people and what they undergo.
Those are the sexy blue cat people, if you're not to speak.
He is directly and specifically, he said it is not supposed to be subtle, it is about colonialism. Yeah. I'm not referring to anything. And he goes on to say a lot about why colonialism's terrible, all the different ways in which, you know, colonials racist and destroyed things. But then this is what he said. James went on to talk about the Lakota Sioux and said, quote, I felt like I was 130 years back in time watching the Lakota Sioux, what the Lakota Sioux might have been saying at a point when they were being pushed and they were being killed and they were being displaced. They were being given some form of compensation. The driving force for me in the writing of Avatar, I couldn't help but think that if the Lakota Sioux had a time window and they could see the future, and they could see their kids committing suicide at the highest suicide rates in the nation because they were hopeless and they were a dead-end society, which is what is happening now, that they would have fought a lot harder.
Yes.
So if only the Lakota people could have watched Avatar 2,
yeah,
they would have fought harder for the annihilation of their...
It's really the fault of Native American people for being such pussies. That's why that genocide went the way it did.
And that's why they are now, quote, dead-end culture.
Yeah. Stop talking, James Cameron. Stop talking.
So this led to the coining of the term blueface.
Right.
which is a riff, of course, on the horrible racist practice of white actors blacking up that was known as blackface. We then got white actors playing Asian roles known as yellowface. Yeah. And this is the latest one known as blueface. Avatar 2 is facing a boycott from a huge amount of First Nations people for this. And it's not just these comments that he's made. It's also that, so I was looking up, trying to work out if there are any First Nations people in Avatar 2, because it's been written and directed by James Cameron, who is...
His name's Cameron, that's not a...
Yeah.
Is that Navajo, or is that Apache, I can't remember. Yeah.
Zoe Saldana played one of the main characters of the Na'vi people, who is American and from the Dominican Republic, respectively. Now, interestingly, when I started to Google this, it says that there was a post from 2018 from an Indigenous People's newsletter saying that James Cameron is trying to cast First Nations people in Avatar 2. It was a cast call out from 2018. So I thought, well, we've got the movie now. How many people were in it? Barely any.
Barely any. Yeah.
So Wes Studi, who's a Cherokee actor, appeared in Avatar 1, and they said his character died in Avatar 1. So how is he going to appear in Avatar 2? He is listed in the cast. I haven't seen Avatar 2. I tell you what, I looked through the cast of Avatar 2, and I don't know... It's largely a white cast and a black cast.
Yeah.
So I couldn't find very many actors of Native heritage. And because I haven't seen the movie, I didn't know exactly how many lines any of these characters get. But I'm going to say it's Kate Winslet is one of the main.
Kate Winslet and Sigourney Weaver are in it, who both are not First Nations.
So I think for not including, but for taking the stories of people saying that you're directly inspired by people like the Lakota Sioux, failing to work with any people or barely anybody, particularly in any roles of significance, and then saying that basically they should have fought harder.
Yeah. What's also weird is that there was certainly a practice, like into the 70s at least, of having white actors playing native roles, which is red face. And now you've got white actors in blue face playing red. They're in blue face doing red face in this film, and they're white and black actors in red face doing blue face. Maybe this is why it hurts your eyeballs to look at it so much.
Now, there was an article that was a bit of an apologist piece for James Cameron, saying that he wasn't just inspired by native people, despite him saying that this is definitely about the colonial period in the Americas, that he was inspired by all sorts of different cultures.
So like the Smurfs, for example.
They had a quote of him saying that he liked some Japanese films. Like sort of Howl's Moving Castle, and that sort of inspired the kind of floating mountain. And there was another bit where they were saying, oh yeah, but also he's really inspired by Hinduism because they've got blue deities. But then the quote was, I just really like the colour blue. So I'm going to say that James Cameron, as he definitely specifically said, is talking about what happened in the colonial period of America.
Stop talking, James Cameron. Stop talking. And stop making these films. This was also on my notes for the most wasted effort. It was like, but apparently it's doing very well, which just depresses me further.
Who knows?
Okay, Andrew Tate is
a last minute addition.
Yeah, very recently. Is a former kickboxing champion who has gone on to be a one of those men's rights influencers. One of those assholes. And who decided, apropos of nothing, to tweet at Greta Thunberg, the climate activist, who is a 19-year-old girl, telling her that he owns 30-odd cars and that he was going to email her with a list of which cars he had and how much their emissions gave off.
He's trying to troll her.
Yeah, in an attempt to sort of... that proves something to a 19-year-old girl who doesn't give a shit about you. Greta Thunberg then replied... Yeah, that's great. If you can email me smalldickenergy@getalife.com. And then Andrew Tate, very normally and healthily and completely secure in himself, released a 2-minute video which basically said, "No, you've got a penis!" Which, off the back of that, Romanian authorities, because he's currently living in Romania in hiding, were able to track him down, and he's now been arrested for people trafficking and sexual assault. So none of that was necessary. That's not even to stop talking. That's just don't start talking. You're in hiding. Don't maybe try and pick a fight with a 19-year-old girl as a male professional kickboxer. Yeah. Like, you can... What the...
This one and the Elon Musk one have got such delicious justice about them that's why I didn't pick them as my winner. So, but, yeah, do we even need to talk about Elon Musk? If you're not signed up to Luke's Substack, where he writes sort of articles on things that are in the news, he's written about Elon Musk. It's really worth reading.
I have. But also, Elon Musk just recently, his house of cards has completely collapsed. He has become the first human in history to lose $200 billion, which he has entirely done by buying Twitter and just tweeting and looking like an arsehole. I was thinking about this. If I had to try to explain what would happen to an alien that had just landed, I can't do it, right? He's bought the website where you just say the thing that you're thinking and then send it to the world, but also all his imaginary money is now leaked away because people saw it. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
My favourite thing he ever did was he did a poll that said, should he step down as the CEO? He lost the poll, and then he said, actually, that doesn't count.
Yeah, only people that pay for Twitter premium will now be allowed to vote in polls.
Which reminded me of the TV series The Young Ones, where Rick Mayall, who plays a really obnoxious, sort of self-righteous little prick, says, "Hands up, who likes me?" Yeah. And that's exactly what Elon Musk did.
That's all he's ever doing.
To the world, hands up, who likes me? And if you ever do that, no one will put their hand up. And that is exactly what happened.
And I realised, if I can't explain all this to an alien, the moral is, just don't be an arsehole. just don't publicly, loudly be an arsehole so much, and it'll probably do well. Like, he had all the money. He could have just gone away and played in his money bin like Scrooge McDuck, but instead he did this.
He's a compelling car crash.
Yeah.
Of a human being. So, should we get on to briefly, let's do some honourable mentions.
Yes.
We should have three each.
Okay, well, I didn't know if you had that one.
Oh, I didn't have that one, actually.
There you go.
Oh,
okay. You're welcome.
All right.
You want to do back and forth? What do you got?
Yeah, so I'll do the first one. So I'm going to put the TV series The English, which is on BBC. Mm. It is an absolutely beautiful, again, Western, not my genre that I'm particularly interested in. This is quite a classic Western in some ways, in that it is a revenge thriller. Emily Blunt plays an English woman who goes to try and track down the man she believes has killed her son on a kind of adventure all across America in 1890. She's joined by Chaskey Spencer, who's absolutely amazing as a native American man who has joined the
American military. I don't see why they couldn't have just painted a white guy blue for that role, frankly.
it looks incredible. It's one of those TV series you cannot be on your phone because it is looks like a painting, all of it. It's beautifully acted. The characters are well drawn. It's just absolutely stunning. So that is my honourable mention.
Yeah. I watched Invincible, which is an animated adaptation of the graphic novel. And again, if you're sick of superhero stuff, I don't blame you. But Invincible, it's a standalone property. It's not tied to anything else. So it takes place entirely within its own world. And is really good. It's features J.K. Simmons, who is always good in things, even if you don't like the projects that he's in, as Omni-Man, who is the sort of Superman figure for this world. And his teenage son finally develops the powers that have been expected all along, and it becomes initially about the responsibilities of being a superhero, which is quite well-trodden ground. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the first episode, and from there on in, it takes a hard left turn into territory that you did not see coming, and it becomes... It does that thing again where some episodes are quite funny. Seth Rogen appears at one point as an alien. But overall, goes to some very, very dark Oedipal places and becomes weird. And yeah, I don't want to say too much about it, but just watch the first episode, and you'll probably, again, be on your phone for like some of it. until the ending bit where you suddenly go, oh shit, this is absolutely not what I thought this was.
Excellent.
Yeah.
My second honourable mention is Everything I Know About Love, which is a BBC series. It's based on the book by Dolly Alderton, which is a kind of coming of age memoir about growing up, being in her 20s in London in the sort of 2010s, and being someone who was a straight white woman in the 2010s living in London, actually not very far from where she was living at the time, but much less successfully. It was a complete nostalgia fest, but I think it's something that will really appeal to, well, again, if you... It's a coming-of-age drama, and it does that beautifully, but, you know, when you've had crap early relationships you don't know what you're doing, and you're the first time you fall in love and sleeping with people and going out with your mates and living in a big house full of other people and doing all that stuff you do in your 20s, it's brilliant. And if you are a woman in your 30s, you will get the nostalgia, but if you're younger, I think you'll just appreciate it anyway. Beautiful character study. I wasn't like, oh yeah, this looks amazing. I sort of put it on out of interest and ended up watching the whole series in about a day. It's really moving. Beautifully done.
Randoms and honours. Inside Job, which is an animated series on Netflix, which I think is sort of taking over where Rick and Morty has sort of wobbled off the beaten path a little bit. Inside Job is it's a workplace sitcom about the people that work for the shadowy government that controls the world secretly. So they're like, basically every conspiracy theory is true simultaneously, and they're desperately flailing, trying to keep a lid on all of them, and wacky workplace hijinks ensue. There's an episode where they have to go on a diplomatic mission to the center of the earth to talk to the lizard people. One of the guys that works in the office is a giant sentient mushroom.
It's really cool.
One of the other guys is a military veteran and hardline right winger who has had his DNA crossed with a dolphin. If any of that appeals to you, you'll be on board with this.
It's very snappy. And my third honourable mention, I am going to choose Minx, which is a series about a woman. It's set in the 1970s. She is trying to start a feminist magazine called, I think, like the Matriarchs or something like that. A kind of very dry, almost cliche, pretty cliched kind of feminist tome. The only editor who is remotely interested in her is a porn sort of magnate who says that she needs to do, basically she can do her feminist magazine if she also creates a kind of playgirl where she has naked male centerfolds. And it's just a journey about them creating this magazine together, and so it becomes an interesting conversation essentially between two different sides. They have a wonderful supporting cast. It's wonderful character study. It's really funny, and it makes you realise how much you barely ever see male nudity on screen.
This will top up your quota if you need to. Also, weird production on it, where the first series is very good. They got a second series, they filmed it, and then it got cancelled, so the second series is kind of in limbo. I hope they unearth it because
it's really, really watchable. Again, it's really great. It's definitely worth seeking out.
And my other honourable mention, you pointed out, The Boys is still really good on Amazon, which the first series, which was, I thought, was pretty good. It was okay. And the second and third series have been fantastic. It's, again, a superhero. In this case, it's a corporate and political satire based around the idea of superheroes. If superheroes were real, like, they've all got sponsorship deals with various brands. They're all... some of the more powerful characters, their politics are very, very disturbing, because being all powerful turns out makes you a fucking Nazi. And it's... but also, like, genuinely shocking in a number of scenes in every series. You don't watch it because it's too horrifying for you.
It's too horrifyingly violent. Just some of the descriptions of the things that were on it, I can't get out of my head. So I think, unfortunately, I'm not going to be able, unless someone can do me an edited version where we fast forward through the incredibly grotesque violence.
I can't say too much about that, but The Boys, okay, first series, second and third, superb. Going to end on a fourth soon.
So that is the Hollies. Thank you very much.
I don't know. I'm just becoming a clanger. I don't know.
Thank you, Luke. Thank you so much for listening. We hope that you enjoyed that. We hope you got some recommendations. If there are things there that you haven't watched, we'll do a list of everything that we're going to talk about in the show description so that you can reference it. And Happy New Year!
Happy New Year, everybody!
Hey.